February 18, 2016, at 6:44 p.m., Adam says, and I quote, "Sometimes you gotta let a baby live a little bit before you give it a name." And that's what we're doing with this podcast. We're not sure what to name it, so we're letting the baby live a little bit.
Twitter is gold. Okay.
Yeah, we don't have a name yet.
Okay.
Right now it's the Adam and Colin podcast. It's a placeholder.
Oh, so it's a temporary?
Yeah.
Okay.
Temporary. So with us today, we have Dan, who is the founder and leader of
Ghost. Why do you always look at the camera?
I don't know. So I see myself.
Don't look at it, man.
We have Dan, who is the leader.
It's kind of like me saying,
The leader and founder of Ghost, a paranormal investigation team that has done plenty of investigations over the last 8 years, was it? 6 years?
Well, I've been investigating since probably 20 years, but I established a group in 2010.
Okay, so yeah, 8 years.
So what kind of equipment were you using 20 years ago?
Oh, geez, basic equipment. I had a very small Panasonic recorder that was really cheap. I think I paid $50 for it at Staples. And I had an old Sony Handycam with the CDs that had night vision. That was it. That's what I started with.
Wow. CDs.
Yeah.
You know
how much I paid for that camera back then? It was over $700 for that camera. And today you can get better cameras for half that price.
Yeah, that's like my camera's about that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's crazy. No, I started with one digital voice recorder and Sony Handycam with CDs, 30-minute CDs. That's what I started with.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have some footage that we can...
Oh, I have tons. I have tons. My first investigations were done with that Handycam. And it was like, you have to go to the store and buy like a bunch of CDs because you're going to be filming so much during the night. So I ended up having to buy like 10 CDs or 20 CDs.
I don't even understand what that means.
They only do 30 minutes each. It's not like having a DVR. It's not that can film for 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Those Handycams like CD after CD after CD.
Yeah, I had one of those bad boys.
It's better. Mm-hmm.
So we also here have with us Taylor, who is a member of the Ghost team. Taylor, do you want to tell the viewers what you do on the team?
Yeah, well, I'm an investigator like everyone else is, but I'm also in charge of social media, mostly in charge of just communicating with people, I guess, and getting our name out there when our events are coming up, just creating the hype.
How did you get into it?
Into that sector of
Ghost? into investigating altogether.
I mean, I was always interested in the paranormal and in investigating specifically. When I was a kid and stuff, I'd watch all the ghost shows that were out there and... Like, when I was a kid, I think it was, like, Scariest Places on Earth and, like, those sorts of things that were on TV. But I had a really paranormal experience when I was, like, 17, I think, and I just didn't know where else to look. I started looking on Facebook on the groups, like, to see if we had any teams in Ottawa. I wasn't even expecting to find any, I don't think, but I found out there were, like, a few. And Ghost just caught my eye. It was one of the first ones that came up. They seemed like scientific. I'm very like scientific minded, and I needed to know like what I just experienced, and I wanted to make sense of it, like in a way that makes sense, which is science and facts. So I just reached out and I sent a message to the group, just offering to volunteer. Actually, I was like, I know a lot about the paranormal. I'd love to just observe one day or help in any way. I'll do like the grunt work, whatever you need. You know, I just want to talk to some people who also know about the paranormal, maybe can explain what I was experiencing. And you sent me like the application form and said, well, why don't you try applying and we can meet and get to know you. And
I think it was Joey that met you initially. I couldn't make it.
Yeah, it was Joey. Joey used to be me up the first time.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And then he forgot.
So what kind of projects do we have coming up?
Wow, we got tons of projects coming up.
So many.
You guys are going to be busy, big time. We have a bunch of investigations coming up. We're at the point now where we're not investigating locations, we're investigating towns. Mm-hmm. We have already done 3 locations in Gananoque, and now we're going to be doing another, I think there's 6 already confirmed locations. Wow. Town Hall, Visitor Center, Presbyterian Church, the Riverside Bar and Grill, and the Bullock House are confirmed. So yeah, it's going to be an extremely busy spring and summer, and we got tons of stuff that's going to be. We're going to have a science, physics student join us at one of the investigations, just to validate our methods, and it's good to get a perspective from somebody from the science community since we have the scientific approach, right? It seems to be a fitting to have somebody from that.
And layer on whatever we can, you know, to just...
Well, again, it's because we want to be credible as a group. So, of course, the best way to do it is to be criticized by somebody from that community to say, listen, your methods are either valid or they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, he'll be there to try to, you know, keep us, you know, in a controlled environment, you know, make sure, like, nobody's walking around. Yeah. You know, he'll be able to point out and be like, okay, not everyone's here, so we need to make sure that... You know, not like that's not somebody else walking around up there. Like, he'll be able to help us in that direction.
And not only look at our methodology being, you know, done correctly, but also looking at the things that we capture and maybe explaining, does this fit into the laws of physics? Is it something that's explainable easily with the way physics works? And I'm sure he has a general working knowledge of all kinds of science that might be relevant, but and can maybe validify if what we've caught doesn't make sense, you know, and is unexplainable. That's just to have an expert's opinion. And then we've got you guys, you're in videography, so you help us with those aspects of visual captures and audio. You know, it's just, it's well-rounded now. We're trying to just add on to our system. It's a whole system that we use. It's
well, scientific. When you look at the scientific approach, it's all about having a controlled environment, right? So having somebody from scientific community there to maybe to show us, like, okay, there's certain things you guys are doing that's not controlled and it should be controlled, because science is all about controlled experiments, controlled environments, and that's how you get the concrete evidence. That way you can rule out contamination, or, you know, somebody's walking upstairs, or there's somebody closing a door, coughing in a corner, or, you know, two investigators are whispering in a corner, and then you mistake it for an EVP. So that's a controlled environment. That's going to be the whole point of, and he's going to be there at the town hall and visitor center investigations. Not all the Gannon Aqua investigations, but he's already confirmed that he will be there for that those two nights.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, going to be cool.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we can talk about some of the tools that we use for our investigations and how exactly we use them.
Specifically, like what kind of tools, like which ones? I mean, there's so many. I mean,
let's talk about the ghost box for a second. So
that's one that's skeptical for me.
That's a skeptical.
The ghost box is a lot of the team likes it. I know you like it, Taylor. It's a good
fun.
Tool.
Like,
it's fun. It's a fun
it's
tool
one of those
to use.
Things like if you're gonna capture something, you're gonna hear it.
And
it's
gonna
time,
be live.
So
it's gonna be a live capture. Yeah, it's gonna be a live capture. The tools we use. I mean, the ghost box is one of them. Very skeptical on it. EMF meters, of course. Every team uses the EMF meters, but.
These are instant gratification tools.
Yeah.
You got to know how to use them, though, too, because you go around, you check spots. If there's wires in the walls, you mark them, you know. So
well, you take base readings.
Base readings, right.
Because a lot of people think that you can detect a ghost with an EMF meter, but you can't. It's scientifically, it's not proven. The hypothesis, and that's, to me, that's a big word, is that people are saying that, and one example that I use a lot, and I used it at that last private residence that where the child was seeing a figure, and the father was asking me, like, how does an EMF meter work? How does it detect a ghost? So I said, well, the hypothesis behind it is that, so I use a microwave. So I put the EMF meter, because the microwave will spike the EMF. So I put the EMF meter right in front of the microwave, and of course it has a base of maybe, you know, 0.01. And then I'll put 10 seconds on the microwave and turn it on, and then suddenly it spikes to 200. So my example is, the hypothesis is the microwave is the ghost. The ghost is silent, the EMF is not firing. Turn on the microwave, the ghost is active, the EMF goes up. Mm-hmm. That's the hypothesis. That's what people are saying is happening, is when there's a ghost present or an entity present, the EMF will spike. Scientifically proven,
it's not
no.
So much that we're measuring the ghost itself's EMF. I mean, that is a theory that ghosts are made up of EMF, but it's a more common theory and more scientific theory that it's actually measuring just a disruption in the EMF that it already exists in our atmosphere from our machines and our houses and stuff
right.
like that. And it's just thought that the presence of the spirit just disrupts those waves, and so it'll pick up on that disruption as well.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
Well, it's kind of like the example with the microwave.
Itself.
It disrupts the meter's at 0.01. Turn on the microwave, which is radio waves. That goes on, disrupts the field. The meter registers it.
Yeah.
That's the hypothesis behind EMF meters maybe detecting the presence of ghosts, but it's still not proven.
Yeah.
If you can validify that spike with visual and audio evidence on top of that, then maybe it's a little bit more. It's a little bit more credible, you know?
Yeah. Or if our base readings are at a certain level and then we catch something different, I mean, that's what makes you think. Because, and it's not to say that electrical equipment doesn't, you know, work in waves sometimes. We could go buy an electric box and everything could be off, and then we could go back later at night and something has switched on, so it's measuring it. But for the most part, when we do base readings, it's so that we can measure what the default level of the atmosphere in this place is. Mm-hmm. So if something's out of place, that'll stand out, and yeah, we're in that same spot.
Base readings. But,
yeah.
You know, what's the average base? What's the norm?
Yeah.
And when that norm is out of sync, then
So we are using that equipment to measure EMF, just natural EMF from usually things from machinery. It's just.
I think also
abnormalities and anomalies that shouldn't be there.
But a lot of the misconceptions in groups that is that people automatically assume when an EMF goes off, oh my God, it's a ghost, but it's not. Unless you have, and I use this as an example, EMF goes off, you have Casper in the camera going boo, and you hear boo on the recorder.
Okay, yeah, maybe you got something. Yeah,
maybe you have something credible there. But
That's kind of one of the main reasons why I wanted to join the team, is because you guys have that kind of approach. And like after our first meeting that I had with you, Dan, like I realized that you guys weren't just those people that jumped at dust blowing in front of the camera. You know what I mean? Like you think you might have caught something, and you're like, okay, but can we stack it with other evidence? And if all that stuff correlates, then you guys are kind of like, okay, maybe we do have something.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Back up your evidence. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of groups that are just not skeptical enough, or they don't scrutinize their footage enough to actually, and I think that's the whole point of the scientific approach, is that it kind of goes in a circle. Well, you have an hypothesis, you test it, you analyze it, everybody doesn't agree on it, then you do it all over again.
You're
going around until you actually find something everybody can say, okay, well, this is paranormal.
I think that's why we're trying to use like a rubric now at this point, so we aren't just jumping to like, oh, that was weird.
Yeah.
It has to hit a certain amount of layered verification or in like credibility, different, like lots of different types of evidence for one moment that we have to layer and check off for us to be like, okay, this is compelling. Like on paper, we have all these things, audio, visual, EMF happening in the same instance, and maybe even a personal account. Someone felt weird. I mean, that's the only time we can use some of these things. Other teams will just use those on their own, but now we have a system and it's a procedure, and we're sticking with that. That these things all have to go together, or really not at all. They don't really count for anything on their own.
A lot of it, I think, too, is people have to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy a piece of equipment, at least know how to use it. You know, and I'm not saying this that, you know, most teams don't know what they're doing. I mean, the field is so, to me, it's still in its infancy, because there's no real equipment out there that's been, okay, this is a ghost detecting machine. There's nothing out there like that right now. But we use whatever's at our disposal. So who am I to say that, you know, somebody's method is wrong as compared to ours? But if you're going to use a scientific method, it's use it as a like a deduction, like a process of elimination.
Yeah, exactly.
Be critical of your equipment. Be critical of your footage. You know,
the equipment is to like eliminate other factors. It's not to point fingers at the paranormal, but it's to eliminate. Okay, it's not a fridge. It's not wind. It's not this. And when you've eliminated anything you can possibly think of that's logical from all of our investigating and observing the way the place is built, the way the windows are, everything, when you've eliminated all of that, then you're just left, you know, with
no conclusion, but we can't
explain it. So it's unexplainable, which is paranormal by definition.
Well, but yeah, by definition, paranormal means something you can't explain via scientific means. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's a ghost or an entity or the spirit of somebody that, you know, passed on and they're lingering on. It just means we can't explain it with whatever means we have today, scientifically anyways. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody in our team has a scientific... I actually had a question once, an email that was sent to us, and, oh, well, you guys don't have PhDs in science and stuff like that. And I said, well, I don't think I need a PhD in science to point and shoot a camera, to set up a DVR system, or to use a digital voice recorder.
Yeah.
But of course, and that's why we have Dave coming up on the investigation. It's like, okay, well, fine. Obviously, some of our followers had that question. You guys don't have PhDs. I mean, we all have experience in our own fields. I took sound engineering a long time ago. You guys have experience with cameras. Elliot's got a background in psychology. Taylor, parapsychology. We all have our own backgrounds. Okay, we don't have PhDs on it. But it's still valid. So by having Dave, and now we actually have a person that actually does have a physics degree or is studying to have a physics degree.
Yeah, we'll always consult someone if we can't answer it ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's beyond our basic like levels of understanding and observation.
Yeah.
We can always reach out. These people don't need to be parts of our group permanently.
Plus, we don't get paid. I can't afford a PhD at university.
Yeah.
So would you say that... The most paranormal experience that you've had so far that you want to talk about, that you want to share to people before.
You want me to go released. Back to that one experience, right?
Well, no,
actually, let the cat out of the bag.
Well, no, you don't have to talk about the Trinity because I mean, like, we were all there. It was quite the experience. I mean, like, if you want to talk about it here, you're more than welcome to. Or we can save that for when we release that on the Ghost page.
Let's wait to the Ghost page.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. That's so probably better with the episode, yeah, whatever you guys are going to work with.
Yeah, yeah. Tons of other
stories. I didn't have an experience, but we'll get into details at that point, I think, when the time comes.
Follow us on Ghost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go to our Facebook page.
Yeah.
We'll link it in the
You'll find out eventually, yeah, what happened.
So a little bit separate from the equipment and all the technology part of it, why do you think, what would be the reason for these spirits trying to do what they did? You know, like, what are their intentions? Why are they coming? Why are they making activity?
Well, I mean, the theory is that, you know, some people may, you know, we have an energy once we pass on. That energy has to go somewhere. I don't know if it's Einstein that said you can't eliminate energy, it can only change form.
That's the laws of matter.
Yeah, laws of matter and physics.
Nothing can be destroyed, it can only change form.
Exactly. So sometimes if you have unresolved issues in your life and you pass on, let's say, dramatically traumatically, you know, accident, murder, or anything like that, and you haven't finished what you wanted to finish, well, you're going to get caught between the living and the let's say, the wherever we go when we pass on. We don't know what that is, but you're in limbo in between. So some people may say that the spirits get angry because you're stuck in that limbo, so you got bad spirits. Like, you have bad people in the world, you have good people in the world, well, you have bad spirits and you have good spirits, if that's the case. So they get stuck in between, and sometimes they haunt the living, and that's the theory behind. Maybe that's why they do certain things.
Yeah.
Either dissatisfied in where they are, maybe they don't even know they've passed on. But again, it's all hypothesis and theory. I mean, we don't know what happened. Unless you can actually die and come back and give somebody the account of what you experienced, then it's all left interpretation. I mean, who knows what happens?
It's not to say that spirits that have moved on, whatever that means, they're not in this purgatory, they're not a ghost, but it's not to say that those spirits still can't make contact. Like, there are a lot of psychic mediums or, you know, people who have had contact with their loved ones that have said, like, I've moved on. They've gone to whatever light it is, but they can still pop in and out sometimes. So it's not to say that all the spirits that we encounter, all the weird phenomenon that happens, is necessarily like a trapped spirit. It could be, and it may not even be a human spirit who, like, even lived or died. It could just be concentrated energy, is kind of how I like to look at it, because I'm not religious, but.
So there's like intelligent and non-intelligent.
Yeah, there's residual energy too, which is just imprints on the atmosphere that winds up replaying if it's triggered by a certain sinking of the atmosphere again that matches, you know, a certain time that was recorded in the past. It'll just start looping and playing again. Things like door slams, footsteps,
smells.
Cigarette smells.
Actually a name. There's actually a name for that. The smell portion, not just visual. Mm-hmm. There's a name for when you, what did they say, you smell a ghost. Something like that.
Clairsentient.
Or something like that. But like you were talking about residual energy, what I've read is that every single surface that is around us is like a vinyl record. It records everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. Well,
like
wood, stone,
natural surfaces.
Limestone, probably, especially.
Yeah. Limestone is a big one,
yeah.
And it records every event. And sometimes that record will start playing hundreds of years later,
will trigger it.
And you'll capture that on audio or visual. But it's always going to be repeating the same thing, and it's not going to be interacting with you intelligently. So it'd be a residual.
No, it's not a lot. It's not conscious. It's not.
Yeah. That's what they say.
It's just a sound usually, or a smell, or like a sensory sort of thing that just got trapped in the atmosphere.
And it just plays itself over
just
and over again.
Plays itself like a video. It could be that our time and space sort of crosses, or it could just be that moment of the past has come into our present time and space. Time and space is like such a weird fluid thing that we can't.
Even. I watched a documentary on that lately, and I got so confused. I'm going, okay, this guy's talking.
I just read a whole book on quantum
time
physics.
Time and space, quantum physics. Time is like a slice, a bread that's sliced.
It's layered, yeah.
It's layered. It was so weird.
Time space is one thing now that they kind of see it as, and you can bend it and you can
manipulate
gravity. I mean, makes holes in time space and compresses it and stuff sometimes. So there are crossovers. There are so many accounts of people finding themselves all of a sudden in like a different era, and then they kind of snap out of it. They're back. Their scenery that they're looking at is back in their own time, or like, you know,
or time travel. They end up somewhere
where
they're not supposed
to
be.
Just kind of jumping, and so I think sounds can do that, and imprints if they're loud enough, dramatic enough. I don't think like everything gets captured in the atmosphere necessarily on a level that can be reheard by our ears and our eyes at another time. I think it has to be like loud, like cannonballs firing, or like. Or emotional, like emotional trauma. If someone's like crying, like really having like a moment, and then, you know, they pass away like 100 years later, you might hear that crying over and over again. Like, because that was some kind of emotional moment that really seeped into the atmosphere or the walls itself or whatever is around, you know.
So kind of like a loud recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be like loud or abrupt. It has to kind of cut the air. It has to cut the atmosphere.
And
to stick.
Apparitions are, sorry to cut you off there, but apparitions are usually described pretty similarly. You know, like see through foggy.
Well, there's different
shadows,
levels of manifestation. That's the thing, right? So, I mean, it can range anywhere from. I usually would start with an orb, probably, because that's such a small. You know, that's what I would picture as maybe stage one of a manifestation that we could see with our eyes. And just maybe a little ball of light, and then it can grow. Some people just see like the top half of the body, or even just a face that's probably like translucent at that point, and it'll kind of grow. You know, you can even just see legs, but then you get to the point where you see maybe a full body form, but it's see-through or it's kind of misty. Like some people see kind of like clouds or mist, and then you get to the like last stage, which would be like a full-bodied apparition, where some people have spoken to spirits and didn't even know they were speaking to a spirit. It was like talking to a person. They were completely opaque, and maybe they weren't dressed super weird, and like you could be just like talking to a person. You can even feel the touch, like.
So like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
No, but you know what I find. Exactly. But talking about that, you know what I find weird though? Why is it when people see an apparition, it's always somebody
dressed
in the 1800s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's always somebody with a white dress.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when somebody sees a ghost child, it's always a little blonde girl with a white dress. All
but you
time.
Know, it's
like,
usually in these historical places that these are seen, where the deaths did occur, like early in the 1800s. So I'll say, like, I know some people who live in like apartments. They've like seen apparitions. They're like, yeah, there's some dude in like some plaid or something, like from modern day.
I've never heard that in plaid. It's always a dude with some kind of top hat,
I mean,
or something like that. There's never a plaid
ghost.
Or I've never seen a ghost with a baseball cap. Let's say, you know, it's always some guy with a top hat. It's always around the 1800s. Sometimes
it is usually like women in white dresses and
or a black dress
garments.
With the collar up and it's spooky looking. You know, why not just somebody, some guy in a yellow golf shirt with checkered shorts and a golf club on his shoulder or something.
I mean, like, you know, the first iPhone or something.
Yeah, you know, the first, like the one I had. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of odd, but I remember seeing a program once. It was either a program or a book I read, and they were comparing our different realms to like a high-rise building. So let's say on floor number one, you have aliens. On floor number two, you have Bigfoot. Floor number three, you have humans. Floor number... four, you have ghosts, and the elevator goes up and interdimensional. The elevator goes up and down, but sometimes Bigfoot gets off on floor number one on our floor and goes, "Oops, wrong place." Gets back on the elevator, goes back to his spot. That's why we see them.
Gotcha.
Same thing with ghosts; they
kind
of pop out. We're on the wrong floor, and they go back to their floor after. I mean, that's kind of a weird way of looking at it. But crossing the dimensions is like, "Oop, just got on in the wrong spot."
Because it almost seems like they pop in and out. Like sometimes you can be mid conversation with a spirit, like. You know, using whatever equipment, it seems like you're having a moment, and then they're just gone. Or you can even feel the atmosphere change. You can feel it's active, all this stuff is happening, and then it's like it's quiet, and just all of a sudden everything's just dropped, and you're like, I don't feel anything anymore. It feels so calm here, and it's like, do they have control of how they're popping in and out? Like, But I think somewhere they have to go.
But I think that's happened on some of our investigations where it was live, like really active, and then suddenly, poof, yeah. Everything just suddenly calmed down.
That's why you have to pursue
it,
like as it's happening. You got to go find out where that sound came from. You got to address it as it's happening because you don't know how long you have. You don't. I think they run out of energy. I think it takes a lot of energy for them to kind of burst up into our dimension. I think we all kind of share a dimension, but our eyes and ears can only see certain things. So for them to reach those wavelengths for our eyes and ears to see it. Yeah. Takes a lot of energy. That's why they drain batteries and drain our energy. So I think they kind of have one shot. They can either save up their energy throughout the whole night, so you might seem like you're having a quiet night, and then they can do something like really big, or they can just do a bunch of small things and try and keep their energy up, but eventually they get drained, and you can't see or hear them. Doesn't mean that they're not there, I guess. It's just our sensory perception of it can no longer detect it, even maybe like with our gut feeling or anything, you know?
Yeah, well, what if
sensitivities go down?
What if they're almost just always there at the same level and it's our sensitivities that...
Like dogs and cats could just always see it, or a child could just always see them wandering around the house or whatever, but we only see little snippets when they get little bursts.
But what if we're the ghosts? These people are see that whatever these people are, or these entities are, see us as the ghosts and vice versa. I mean, so many possibilities. I just saw this guy with glasses. He's got some kind of black shirt like that says ghost on it. he was wandering down the hallway.
It's happening right now. There's like a ghost version of like you, and like the shirts say humans.
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of ghosts.
Human hunters.
Human hunters, yeah. Human hunters of scientific truth.
You never know.
Could like a state of hypnosis or sleeping or what you were talking about earlier, could that be used to try to maybe
astral projection?
I think the possibilities are out there. I mean, there's so many ways to investigate. I don't think there's any right way or wrong way, because like I said earlier, the paranormal's been around for a long, long, long time. But I mean, I feel it's still in an infancy stage, because it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not something that even the scientific community, I think, really takes that seriously at this point, because it's so hard to prove.
There's one method in which we can attempt to like prove it and have evidence, which is the scientific method. But there's so many other methods that could definitely find paranormal things and be valid. You could go into astral projection. You could meet them on their dimension. And I mean, lots of people that I know who astral project do encounter things on the astral that would be like spirits, non-human entities, interdimensional beings. Like that's kind of where they supposedly live. You could do it that way. You could do it past life regressions, try and figure out where they're from. Like there's so many spiritual approaches you could take that could definitely be just as valid as the way we're doing it. It's just that we just can't lend any credibility to those things, because there's no science to back it up.
No.
And there's no science to back up how to measure the paranormal, because we don't know what creates life. We can't measure how the first bits of life were created on Earth. We don't really know what gases and elements were needed. We don't know how to measure consciousness. We don't understand why our mind doesn't take place in our brain. They can't understand. They're doing all these experiments where they're like taking lizards and scrambling their brains up and burning off all these pieces where their memories should be stored, yet they still remember all the things they were just trained to do before they've mashed up their brain. So they're like not understanding, you know, where our mind takes place, where our soul lives. There's little bits that they can measure that it seems to show that there is a soul and there is a mind separate from our physical brain, but they don't know like what it's made up of. They don't know like how that would translate when we die, if it is just EMF energy that then stays behind when our physical body goes away. Like they just don't know. So there's no link. We've got all these things that we're doing on our end of metaphysics, and then there's all these things they're doing in quantum physics and physics, but just that little link isn't there. So we can't connect our evidence to call it like proof.
We're
taking the closest tactic that we could for evidence to be called proof one day, so we are following science. But you know, there's tons of spiritualists who are trying all kinds of other tactics. There's mediums who are clearly having conversations with spirits. I mean, they're validating things they couldn't possibly know.
But I think today with stuff like that, and I'm not saying that psychics are not, the people out there aren't psychics, but I think the problem is that there's so much information you get on Google and media and Facebook now, and you know, our everybody's identities are out there for the taking, that any person who deems himself a psychic can go out there, do research,
be very easy
and find
like,
so much stuff about you that yeah. they could say yeah. stuff that they shouldn't know, but yeah. they just know it just from searching online.
Yeah.
Should Google.
I'm saying in special Google, cases yeah. that are like personal things that I've personally, you know, had experiences with where psychics told me like literally things they couldn't, dreams I've had that I've never said aloud, or like things that I was just talking to myself in a car, or like.
Well, that would be more credible then.
Yeah.
If it's stuff that
I think
if it's
it
stuff
exists.
That's impossible, that let's say it's something like you said, if it's something you never shared online, yeah. there's no way anybody could know
no
that. Then okay,
that
that's a little bit more credible,
that.
But.
I think it's just rare, and I think it's so easy to fake. It's so yeah. easy to get people like using psychosomatic tactics and cold reading people, and just you can read a lot from someone's body language or even just profiling them. You know, and then let alone the research you can do on the internet. And it's super easy to be like a fraudulent psychic medium. I think a lot of what's out there is not real.
I think that's why I'm very skeptical of psychics and mediums. And I think in our team, I think that's why that's something that I've never wanted to use as a psychic or medium. Like, I'm not saying that people don't have that talent. It's not for me to decide whether they have it or not. But it's because it's so hard to prove their experience. To validate it somehow, that it leaves too much interpretation when it comes to a scientific approach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They
if you can't document it,
to
you can't prove it, you can't.
This
it
thing.
Just becomes another experience, you know? It's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what would classify as proof for you? Like, if you captured, like, what do you
I
really
want this.
For?
I want this
nothing.
Microphone to slide across the table and for us to capture it on camera. Now, that's evidence.
yeah, okay.
And making
okay.
sure there's not a string or anything
like,
somewhere. But, yeah, something moving.
The opposite of
moving,
physics.
Moving, opposite. Something that defies the laws of physics.
Right.
Like, for me, I think capturing something on video is more credible than something on audio. Because video doesn't lie. If that microphone slides across the table, that's not a lie. That's
like that.
Caught on camera. Yeah. So something moving visually, for me, would be that holy grail of evidence. Like the window at the hostel is a big one.
But with absolutely no other variables. Like the window, it's still, like, in my mind, is a small possibility that it's wind. Like it just, because wind moves windows. I know that the way the wind was moving in that place didn't really match, and the way the window moved was weird and didn't match up. But to me, wind just is still a variable that exists. But like, if this slid across the desk, there are no variables.
No, and wind's not going to move this either.
No,
and it's
there's
too heavy
no drafts. There's nothing.
But that would be the evidence that would be like I like.
That's so obvious.
And that's the reason why when I formed Ghosts in 2010 was. Because of the experience I had at a house I lived in. I had something like a candle holder that's fairly heavy. It wasn't one of those little metal ones. It had a big pillar candle on it. Luckily, it wasn't lit. And I had a shelf on, let's say, on a wall there and a wall there, and it flew across, hit the ground, and bounced and hit the wall across. And that's there was no variable. Like there's no wind. It's inside my living room.
So you didn't hear it. You saw this happen?
I saw it. It just flew, bing, and it almost hit Trina right in... Almost hit her in the head, bounced off the floor, and hit the wall across the
wasn't
living
the
room.
Candle still lit, or like there's no wax?
That's another one. That was a tea light. That was a tea light. And that's, again, it's stuff that happens, laws of physics that doesn't make any sense. I had a tea light, you know, a tea light's that little aluminum thing, and when you light it, all the wax goes total liquid, but it's still lit.
Right.
I had one of those on the shelf. I didn't see it fall, though. We were in the kitchen cooking supper, and we heard a thump. In the dining room, I had another shelf close to the dining room table. Heard a thump, went to the dining room, and I'm looking on the ground, and the tea light is now on the floor.
Face up.
Wow. Face up, still lit. The glass holder that I used to get at IKEA is now flipped upside down right beside it. Not a single ounce of wax spilled, and that shelf was about at least 5 feet off the ground.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So... how does that happen? How can a tea light that's fully
so
liquid...
Well,
it would flip over, right? And I'd have
wax
all over the floor on the candle. The candle should have went out, but no, it's sitting on the floor.
No.
It's sitting on the floor, still
the
lit.
Only way
not
to
an ounce of,
you'd have to have it in like
of wax
a sand,
spilled.
A sand bucket, whipping it, like, you know...
Yeah, it's like taking a bucket and turning it this way. The water's not going to stay in the bucket. It's going to go flying.
Yeah.
Well, there's no wax spilled, and it was still lit.
Yeah, it's...
So I was, like, just scratching my head, and... This place was just, the place I lived in was just, and that's what to me was that like the question you asked, that's the kind of evidence I'd like to capture again. Too bad back then I didn't have cameras to capture it in 2010. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes this kind of stuff happens. You're never prepared for it. It just happens.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, like the hostel, we caught the window.
Yeah,
camera at the right time at the right place, it happens.
Honestly, all of our experiences have been happening when we weren't really expecting it, or we even like were beyond not expecting it. We were so naive. We were like,
well, we weren't expecting the window. We were at base, and all we heard was a slam.
Yeah.
And when we ran to it, it was like, well, something opened and slammed, and we knew it was a window just because of the way it sounded. Like you could tell it was like something with glass that just slammed, mm-hmm. and the one window that did open was that one there.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So physical evidence to me would be the best kind of evidence as opposed to audio.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about like, you know, what kind of like being an actual, you know, paranormal investigator means, and you know what, like, you know, what the theories are for ghosts and stuff like that. Let's talk about what, you know, people don't actually see.
Oh my god.
You know, the staying up, you know, for 24 hours straight, you know, eating terrible food.
One thing comes to mind.
So much pizza.
The investigation in Montreal and Notman, that was just...
The Notman? Oh my god,
being disturbed in the morning. You taking a bit. Oh, that was so terrible. You take the video, the selfie video you took at yourself. You had such a tired look going, oh my god, we just got woken up at 8 o'clock in the morning after 3 hours sleep.
Yeah.
That was too funny.
Did we even, was it 3 hours? Like,
we went to bed at 5 and that group started walking into the hall. I think it was at 8 o'clock.
Some lady came in was like,
with bags.
Frantic.
There's
yeah.
a bunch
panicking.
Of people.
What are you
there's
doing
a bunch
here?
Of people sleeping on mattresses in the hall.
She thought we were squatting.
We
She probably did.
What are all these squatters doing?
Squatting in the Notman House.
They all got the same t-shirts on.
They're all part of the same squat club. That was kind of crazy.
Crack together.
But that was funny seeing Colin's face going, oh my god, we just got woken up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Awful. That was so much fun though.
But that's the kind of stuff that people don't see.
Yeah.
You know, people think it's all fun and games, but it's not. You're tired.
It's shared spaces with people on public places, so
lack of sleep.
Mm-hmm. You're not always on your own schedule, you're on like mm-hmm. the coordinators of places
and
by the second night, I mean, we're especially exhausted. I mean, the first night usually is like, okay, you know, even waking up early and a little sleep. But the second night's like, you're doing it all over again, running on like 3 hours of sleep, and then you're staying up to 5 again. And
I usually find that like, sorry to cut you off there. I usually find that like after the first night, it's not so bad. And like you wake up in the morning, like you're tired and stuff like that, but like it's not terrible, like it's manageable, but it's like the afternoon, like getting ready for the investigation, we're all like silly and like
you get the giggles.
We do, we get kind of weird.
Yeah.
But we got lucky though on a lot of investigations, like the Willow.
Oh my
that's
god.
That's like whole that's this like vacation. The Bentley of investigation.
Nice, like,
the Trinity House was amazing too. The hostel amazing because we had accommodation, so we actually get a chance to sleep at least for 4 or 5 hours, get some decent rest. And then some locations you don't get that chance. You can nap also, yeah. But you don't get that chance most of the time to actually rest in between. So then I think sometimes that's something that could play a factor in the when because especially our team does mostly two-night investigations. Because I think you can't really go one night and actually say, okay, well, it's not haunted, but it's not. You got to do two nights.
Mm-hmm.
I think sleep deprivation could play a role also.
Yeah.
Yes.
In our investigating the day after, you get tired, your imagination can run wild.
Absolutely.
So
but we're not staying up for days. Like we all of us go to sleep eventually.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think sleep deprivation is if you go, let's say 24 hours without sleep, then it starts really kicking in. If you get at least a good 3, 4, 5 hours sleep, a little bit better. At least we get that.
There's usually like at least one or two of us who's like more sane than the other. So when someone's like a little loopy and like maybe seeing things that's maybe not there, I mean, there's still people to ground us and like we all corroborate our own things. So, I mean, I don't think we get hysterical. Like, I don't think. I think
well,
we have the opposite
funny.
Effect.
It
when one person's
sometimes.
Like experienced a lot of stuff, I think we're trying to find out like why it's not paranormal and why it's not something to be like freaking out about.
Well, I think that's why the monster drinks can kind of come in handy.
Yeah, see, I'm allergic to caffeine. I don't even have any help. I'm like on my own.
I always have at least one monster drink at an investigation, especially on night two.
Yeah, you guys drink so much coffee.
I drink all the coffee.
Yeah.
I drink all the coffee.
No one else drinks any of the coffee. I drink it all. It's all mine.
I'm a night owl to begin with, though, so yeah, to be honest, it's kind of nice having friends stay, like doing an activity
it's my
together.
My pretty normal bedtime, honestly, when we go to bed sometimes. I go to bed at like 3. We go to bed at like 4 or 5. Yeah. It's really not too bad.
So I'm not used to that routine.
Early mornings, though. I'm not
You're not
that.
A morning person, right?
I'm not a person until noon at least.
It's like I said, we've been lucky at a lot of investigations. Like mm-hmm. really cool places
yeah, really
we've been in.
Yeah, really comfy beds and nice like our own bathrooms.
The Willow was beautiful too.
Oh, that was just beautiful. Yeah. Willow was just such an amazing place. I want to go back there. I want us to go back there.
And it felt okay in there. Like sometimes it's kind of creepy going to bed at the end of the night. You're done investigating. You're on your own now, and you're like, and you just want sleep at that point. You like. I always want an experience if it's going to, like, change my life. But, you know, at a certain point, I'm like, I really hope everything just leaves me alone and I can sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
Colin and I like to blame it on the fact that we like to keep all of our equipment together in one room, but really we're just scared.
We both bunk in the same
that's
bed.
That's why
we're
in the same room. Bed buddies. We're just,
you know, I'd like to have an infrared. I'd like to have a night vision camera on those guys during the night. So they just
have an audio recorder. Like, go listen like the conversations
we were up all night.
Have.
All night talking.
So you must have been really, really scared of the Trinity then.
The Trinity, Yeah, like we all kind of slept in the same vicinity, like Taylor, Adam, and I like slept in the same
very close vicinity. I think
the two beds, Elliot and I the couches that were like you know 10 feet away from us, like in the other side of the room.
Yeah,
and, like I just remember trying to like not think about like the crazy thing that had happened that night, and just like trying to laugh and be funny.
Yeah, we were just trying to look at your Twitter.
the Adam's tweets.
The funny
and we
thing.
Were like really loopy too. We were really tired. We just couldn't stop laughing. We just
but I think at that point, everybody started getting a little bit more serious. I think at that point, after that stuff happened.
Yeah.
And I remember the one, I was in the basement in the morgue with Colin. And he said, Dan, give me the 2-way. And I said, why? He says, in case you start acting squirrely, I want to be able to call base.
Get ready to kick you.
Oh, my God. And I said, well, I'm blocking the door, Colin. So even if you try to go by, I'm still in front of the
door.
That's
not what you want to hear.
I had a plan. Like, I knew. I was like, okay, if Dan starts freaking out and tries to, like, kill me or, like, do some crazy nonsense right now, I was like, I'm going to jump and, like, donkey kick with both of my legs. And I'm just going to jump over his body and sprint out of here. And just sprint. Adam!
But the weird thing is, Elliot caught an EVP, which seems to be very compelling, and it wasn't me saying it, where it says, how you doing, Colin?
We're releasing
one piece of evidence from the Trinity right now.
Yeah, I saw
that. Is that we caught an EVP that
was
said...
Was there a camera on you? Like, because you were mumbling to
Elliot's
yourself.
The one that
you were whispering
it.
To yourself.
How you doing, Colin, or something like that.
Where was the EVP? Like,
We were in the morgue. Me and you alone.
Wow.
We were doing like an EVP.
That's unsettling.
Yeah.
That whole night was unsettling. Yeah. We definitely were like in a weird mood after it all. Even after you came back to kind of normal, we got you into the house. So like everyone was shaken up. We didn't really know how to continue with the night. Like how do we continue now? How do we top that? And like do we even want to go and pursue this thing? Like,
oh, I want to go to pursue this for sure.
I know.
And then we're not going to give too many
crazy
details.
Crazy for sleeping back down there.
But yeah. I want the team to go back to the Trinity for sure. I mean,
I don't really want to find out
what happened.
But I think we have to.
I want to find out what happened in that place.
I definitely had a kind of a weird connection there. The angel. Yeah. You know, that's all I'll say. But
well, that's the first time I've seen you get involved in some of the experiments.
Because I felt,
and so did Eileen. Eileen got away from base and she got involved in these. So I think this is the kind of stuff we should do a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. I like having people do their functions because it's more of a structured, controlled environment. Cameraman, Eileen's at base, but I think it's okay to switch stuff around a little bit once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I think it's good, you know, like if you're doing something, I can grab the camera, Taylor can grab the camera, and maybe train somebody else at base, but I think there should always be somebody at base.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because
mm-hmm.
with the last investigation we did, all
at
those base notes
person.
That Eileen
it's
takes,
so
we don't have them anymore
cameras,
because
like,
she wasn't there.
Yeah,
she
true.
Base, you know? But it's
I tried, I'm just... Base is not for me.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Oh, it's not for Kyle either.
No.
No, never Kyle. I think
poor
He'll
Kyle.
Fall
great
right
investigator,
asleep.
But poor Kyle. Twice he falls asleep in the base. Where's Kyle? Oh, he's sleeping in the base.
Yeah, he can't fight the sleep.
If we do bigger investigations, like I almost want to break up into smaller teams, like even groups of like two, because I feel like you're
more vulnerable
at that point.
Well, it's so hard with the locations we're doing right now because they're big, but not that big. That's why I'm hoping to get something like the Rockwood Asylum. Like a really huge
amazing.
Rockwood Asylum.
Or maybe
somebody hears us. We're trying to get into the Rockwood Asylum in Kingston.
Anyone who knows them.
Yeah. Anybody who has contacts, please let us know.
Absolutely.
It's like a location like that. I don't think we'd have much of a choice than to separate because that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah.
All right. So on that note, if we do hold investigations, why don't you tell the listeners where they can get involved at, where they can find out all this information regarding Ghost and any upcoming.
Well, anything we hold, whether it's a private investigation for the team or a public event, it's always posted on our Facebook page at Ghost Canada on Facebook. So just look for us on Facebook and also our actual webpage, which is ghost-canada.com.
Mm-hmm.
All the information on our upcoming investigation events are there. So
Perfect. That's
where people can go.
I'll link everything in the description so people can find it easier.
We have Instagram, Twitter too, everything. But
Twitter
everything
kind of
congregates on the Facebook page. And then if you want to see like cool pictures and stuff, you can hit up the Instagram. If you want just little announcements, little, just to let you know what's coming up, our Twitter's got that. But Facebook's kind of the place where it's all located.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff coming up.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for coming out.
Thanks
for sitting
down with
us
on your podcast.
It's
going to be a busy spring and summer.
Yeah, definitely going to be a busy spring and summer.
Yeah.
Awesome time. Thanks, Taylor.
Yeah, of course.
No
problem. Okay. All right, we're going to get into this room in
three
and a half minutes.
Okay, so we're pretty much done, but I kind of want to do something. One of us has to look into the camera and say we love you and good night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we decided
this is our sign off.
We're going to sign off. We're going to play rock, paper, scissors. Whoever wins.
How about we love you and good night, lights out?
Oh, I like that.
Like, yeah, okay.
I like lights out too.
All right, so
rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper,
scissors. We'll go first. You guys going to
do it?
You guys go against each other and then we'll go for the winner.
We're going to say. What is happening?
Just rock, paper, scissors.
Damn.
Okay.
Ah, she got the scissors.
Okay, ready? Okay, you got me. Look into the camera.
What do I say? I love you and lights out.
Love you and lights out.
We love you, good night, and lights out.
We love you, good night, and lights out.
We love you, good night, and lights out.